Maggie TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Yep.
Message, message, message in a bottle, my friends. A live version from The Police. and this is my message in a 21st century bottle. And it's called Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato, and I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Bursting at the seams with news, and again, it is a message in a bottle. Floating all around the world. Sometimes bottles come back to me. Amazingly enough, we're calling this the C-side of episode 164. Coming to you in the early morning hours of April 9th, recording live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And there's so much to go over. And again, that's why I end up doing extra episodes. And the way we're going to start is with the April 8th news purge, subtitled Message in a Bottle. And we're going to go over tons of headlines on the war whores, Obamasiah, and the apostles of war, murder and mayhem, media memes, history, mystery, geopolitics, econocrash. But we're going to start off with the latest drug war updates and begin, appropriately enough, with an op-ed posted to Huffington Post from Sting, ex-lead singer of The Police. And it's titled simply, Let's End the War on Drugs. Whether it's music, activism, or daily life, the one ideal to which I've always aspired is constant challenge. Taking risks, stepping out of my comfort zone, exploring new ideas. I'm writing because I believe the U.S. must precisely do that. And so, therefore, must all of us. In the case of what has been the most unsuccessful, unjust, yet untouchable issue in politics, the war on drugs. The war on drugs has failed. But it's worse than that. It's actively harming our society. Violent crime is thriving in the shadows to which the drug trade has been consigned. People who genuinely need help can't get it. Neither can people who need medical marijuana to treat terrible diseases. We spend billions filling up our prisons with nonviolent offenders and sacrificing our liberties. For too long, the war on drugs has been a sacrosanct undertaking that was virtually immune from criticism in the public realm. Politicians dared not disagree for fear of being stigmatized as soft on crime. Any activist who spoke up was dismissed as a fringe element. But recently I discovered just how much that's changing, and that's how I came to speak out on behalf of an extraordinary organization called the Drug Policy Alliance. I learned of DPA, as they're known, while reading what once might have been the unlikeliest of places for a thoughtful discussion of the drug war, the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. It featured an op-ed that dared to say in print, in thoughtful, meticulous argument, what everyone who has seriously looked at the issue has known for years. The war on drugs is an absolute failure whose cost to society is increasingly unbearable and absolutely unjustifiable. That's just the first few paragraphs from op-ed written from Sting. And again, we see it going all around, and we've been saying on Media Monarchy for quite some time now, that all those changes and hope aren't going to come. But we might bring down the wall, as it were, on the drug war. No surprise, California GOP against pot legalization. More on that from News Junkie Post. You'll recall we've reported the ballot initiative is on for this November in California to straight legalize. Arnold Schwarzenegger, washed up movie star, son of a Nazi, hypocrite. You can watch Pumping Iron, see him smoking pot. He loved it. In the Wall Street Journal op-ed piece that Sting references, of course, we also hit a few weeks ago on our drug war updates. Virginia drug investigation netted 81 felonies against 44 adults. MartinsvilleMedia.com for more on that. NATO's Afghanistan, the champion of drugs production. You got to take your hats off to NATO. This clique of arms lobbyists and defender of jobs for the boys invaded Afghanistan in 2001 on the pretext that Osama bin Laden, boogie boogie, was using the country to attack Western interests. Almost a decade after the Taliban declared war on drugs production, NATO's Afghanistan is not only the world's largest producer of opium now, but also hash. Yorubnet has more on that story. And our last drug war note, with an audio aid. Ashland, Kentucky couple report a fire, and then the cops find their growing operation.
In other news now, a couple from Ashland who called in an early morning house fire got burned in more ways than one. News Channel 3's Randy Yowie has the story of a marijuana growing operation that got lit up and then actually somebody called to put it out.
Well, that's right, Tim, and maybe not the 911 call that William and Kristen Baker really wanted to make, but when the house fire call went out, both fire and police departments responded. Both ended up with work to do. For the police, that meant tearing down a toasted indoor pot farm.
Did you realize that there was an elaborate marijuana growing operation in the basement next door?
No, I was not aware of that at all.
That's what caught fire, so the police say.
Oh, my heavens.
Next door neighbor Melody Nelson says she had no clue as to what police say caught fire in the Baker family's 29th Street home.
Look at the size of that lighthouse. That's a grow light.
Ashland Police Chief Rob Ratliff says his officers found a sophisticated indoor marijuana growing operation at the fire scene. Police confiscated lights and generators and plenty of singed pot plants, along with scales, pipes, and the chemicals and fertilizer used to grow high-quality, very potent marijuana. The chief says faulty wiring in the high-power lighting system appeared to start the 3:30 a.m. fire, a house fire the Bakers themselves, William and Kristen, had to call in.
I think he knew, but he did not have a choice. He had to report it, and he had to get some help.
You know, it seems that we're covering more and more indoor marijuana growing operations here in our region being busted by police.
It's not easy to grow it out in the open in town. You can't really hide that, so they do take those operations inside.
After reporting the fire, William and Kristen Baker were arrested at their home and now face felony marijuana cultivation charges.
That's awful. That's right next door to your house.
Now, neighbors say they were surprised because there was no in-and-out traffic there, and both William and Kristen Baker work at an area hospital. Kristen Baker, at least, licensed as a registered nurse. Now, the Bakers were arraigned this morning on the felony drug charge, Tim. Both are now out of jail on $1,000 cash bonds each.
All right, Randy, and drug task force agents have told us in the past that there are likely countless people who grow maybe a little bit of indoor marijuana or backyard marijuana for personal use. Problem is, when they start growing quantities for profit, that's when trouble can kick in.
Well, and hopefully for not too much longer. And we are going to hear more stories about this. Hopefully not with the fires. And the drug war, and the failure of the drug war, and the possible end of the drug war, or an end, is intimately tied in with the econo crash, as we call it, the new financial world order. And that's our next set of headlines, and we're going to start off with one from allgov.com. Netflix, the Postal Service's largest corporate client, braces for the end of Saturday delivery. News of the Postal Service proposal to end Saturday mail could mean trouble for Netflix. The mail-based DVD rental company's been doing better than average, posting a $150 million profit in 2009 and boasting a subscriber base of 12.3 million Americans. But if the USPS cancels Saturday delivery, some Netflix customers could think twice about the value of the service, since they'd have to go two consecutive days without getting a DVD, not to mention the fact that Saturday night is pretty much the movie night of the week for many families. Postal Service could also cause another problem for Netflix if it raises postage rates again. The company has managed to absorb the cost of other recent hikes in postage by cutting internal expenses and making its operations more efficient. But at some point, There may not be any more fat to trim, leaving Netflix with the choice of raising its rental fees. It currently spends about 78 cents on postage to mail each DVD. One benefit the company could enjoy from the Postal Service's changes is lower labor costs. The elimination of Saturday delivery would mean Netflix could eliminate shifts at warehouses on that day, saving the company money by cutting jobs. And I see jobs often posted as, I believe, a warehouse slash sales rep in Hillsboro, Oregon. And I have to admit, it has kind of appealed to me, being a complete movie geek. And I really like the idea of Netflix. And I like when a new company, new idea comes along and can pretty much destroy something like Blockbuster. And the Postal Service thing, you know, it ties in with just another failed government operation. If it were a regular business, it would have failed a long time ago. That's why we need to be very afraid of, quote-unquote, Obamacare. On down the list of EconoCrash headlines, Money.CNN asks the question, is Sarbanes-Oxley a failure? Now, without going into tons of details, Sarbanes-Oxley Act, of course, was passed in the wake of the Enron WorldCom scandals, robberies. And so to the question, is Sarbanes-Oxley a failure? Well, I add, it is when the software has backdoors. With a link to tragedyandhope.com and the entire film up on YouTube, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line, Richard Andrew Grove of tragedyandhope.com and peacerevolution.org. Of course, also the object of the recent Media Monarchy fundraiser. Still going on. The donate button is on the side. $10 gets the DVD to you. You support alternative media, and we spread it back around. National debt seen heading for crisis level from the San Francisco Guardian. Underemployment rises to 20.3 in March. Underemployment. That's from Gallup. U.S. government, a big commercial real estate player. That's from the Washington Post. Playing with, of course, the money stolen from all of us. If I didn't know better, I would say this is from The Onion. More job seekers opting for cosmetic procedures.
Stocks are higher as Wall Street reacted to the big job report out Friday. In March, employers added 162,000 new jobs, the most in nearly 3 years, but the national unemployment rate is still at 9.7%. In Illinois, it's even worse. More than 11% of the people are out of work. So how do you set yourself apart from everyone else who's looking for a job? CBS2's Mai Martinez reports a growing number of job seekers are seeking a new look from plastic surgeons.
In his 10 years as a facial plastic surgeon, Dr. Stephen Dayan has had no shortage of patients.
A little bit of swelling for the girl, but you're doing really well.
But these days, Dr. Dayan says more and more are looking for an edge in the challenging job market.
A good 10 to 15% of my patients who come in now are requesting treatments in order to make them do better in the workplace.
Dr. Dayan says his patients range from CEOs to receptionists to school teachers and especially salespeople. David Wilk is one of them.
How did you get to the point where you decided you had to have a cosmetic procedure done in order to be viable in the job market?
Well, I knew after being, you know, self-conscious about my nose for a couple of years now, I really needed to have a competitive edge in the industry, so I decided to fix the one thing that really bothered me, which is my nose.
Not all patients opt for surgery. Dr. Dayan says the most popular recession treatment is actually Botox. At his office, about 10 patients a week ask for the treatment, many right before a job interview.
If I can paraphrase Kent Brockman, plastic surgery and Botox isn't just for women anymore. It's also for vain, effeminate males. J.P. Morgan Chase advised homeowners to stop making loan payments, then foreclose on them. More on that from allgov.com, and much more to come on episode 165 on J.P. Morgan and their connections to mountaintop removal in beleaguered West Virginia. A grim assessment of Los Angeles finances from the LA Times. They are going broke very, very soon. A fascinating one from Forbes. What the top U.S. companies pay in taxes. Broke cities ravaging motorists with speeding tickets. More on that from freethinkingzone.com. We noted just a few weeks ago, of course, the massive, I believe, 7,000+ tickets given out in one weekend in Virginia recently. More than 2 million U.S. jobs lost to China. That's again from allgov.com. Laid off workers threaten to blow up a French plant. That's from Raw Story. Canada's only bullion bank gold vault is practically empty. More on that from ZeroHedge.com. Greece sinking deeper as loan costs hit record highs. That's from the AFP. We've just in the past, just recently, briefly brushed and touched on Greece and the banksters and Soros. But Tim Geithner, who again, very recently, we went into his connections to the destruction, the controlled demolition, if you will, of Lehman Brothers, and his cozy connections to the Federal Reserve in New York. He made a surprise trip to see his good friends in Beijing. Now, Webster Tarpley, a now regular contributor to Russia Today, made an appearance recently and breaks it down simply, but of course does it quite well with the context and the subtext on the dangers of exporting the greatest depression.
There's no denying the tension between China and the United States has been escalating, but now U.S. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has made an unscheduled trip to Beijing, and reports indicate that he's delaying the release of a report that many experts predict would have attacked China on currency issues. So what's really going on? Well, joining me to help discuss the latest on this is investigative journalist Webster Tarpley. So Webster, first of all, what do you think is going on here? Many have said that this is an effort by the United States to maybe try to patch things up with China. Do you think that's true?
I think it's an attempt by the United States to carry on a bigger my neighbor or policy or exporting the world economic depression. Probably at the beginning a caveat, right? A trip does not equal a deal. Obama went to Afghanistan. U.S. relations with Afghanistan have been getting worse ever since. But the idea now is the peg, the renminbi. For 20 months now, since the beginning of the world economic depression in the late summer of 2008, there's been a sort of a fixed parity maintained between the dollar and the Chinese currency, 6.8 renminbi to a dollar. And the way that this works is the Chinese buy dollars. They generally buy dollars on days when no one else will. So the rational approach, I think, would be to say, let's have the others come into this, right? Let's get the Japanese yen, the euro, the Russian ruble, the Latin American currency, bring them into a system of fixed parity. The U.S., of course, says no, the opposite, break it up. And what they want is the Chinese currency should be upvalued by 20 to 40%, which is another way of saying the dollar should be devalued by 20 to 40%. So there's now a faction fight in China about this, and that's why the outcome of this is not so certain. There's a guy called Zhu, who is the head of the central bank, and he says, let's do it, let's get the U.S. off our backs, and we'll also have people in China who have money can buy more imported goods. However, you've also got the other faction, which is the commerce minister, Chen, who says, don't do it, because we have these Chinese export companies that are subsisting on a paper-thin margin of profitability. And even if you let the renminbi go up 3 to 4%, you're going to shut down a lot of these companies, and you're going to get unemployment and social unrest and all kinds of problems going with that. The finance minister and a couple of other people seem to be more on that line.
And, you know, so you mentioned the sort of internal conflict that's happening within China, but it seems like there's also one happening here in the United States. Why do you think Timothy Geithner is delaying the release of this report on currency issues in China when more than 130 congressmen have written him a letter very recently saying that they want him to take tougher actions on China.
It's very attractive for Democratic Party demagogues in an election year to start blaming the depression on China, which of course makes no sense. The Chinese, of course, fear the idea that they would be branded as a currency manipulator and then they would get hit with this protective tariff. However, at the same time, they fear unemployment and social unrest inside the country. And I would warn Geithner, who I think is somebody who shows, he's shown in his career, he can't tell a panic until it hits him, and maybe not even then. The way that the peg works is that the Chinese buy dollars. They build up this stash of $1 to $2 trillion in U.S. Treasury paper. If you let this lapse, then a very important support for the dollar disappears. And the dollar is likely to start sliding downwards. And this gets us back to the nightmare of Paul Volcker, who said, once you get a dollar mudslide started, the weakness of the dollar intrinsically is so extreme that there may be no way to stop the slide once it gets going. So this essentially means that the depression is going to get worse for everybody else. The only way out of something like this for China is to take this $1 to $2 trillion that they have of dollars and use it for something. Example, they're focused on Africa. Great. Create a Marshall Plan for Africa. Call it the Sino-African Development Bank. Use those dollars to build up Africa, and then you get a market that would not be the U.S. consumer market, so that they would have an alternative to go to. But up until this point, they haven't been able to make up their mind.
And so really quickly, I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned that maybe this meeting isn't really an indication of better relations or whatever, but what do you think sparked this unscheduled visit? Do you think that perhaps China made some sort of concessions to the United States that we don't know about, and what would those be?
I wouldn't want to speculate about that, because I think there's a kind of hysteria in the world press. The Associated Press wire on this basically says it's going to be singing tomorrows between the U.S. and China, and I really don't think so. Again, I think the Chinese have a hand, for example, in undermining the U.S. in Afghanistan. Maybe the Chinese, though, they basically say, let's do it gradually, let's not push them to with their backs to the wall, and eventually we'll get what we want. They take the long view, whereas, of course, Geithner represents a kind of ruling elite in the United States, which is crazed by this depression, and they feel that they've got to get concessions right away. I think the Chinese would like to push this beyond the U.S. election and take it out of the sphere of demagogy, and maybe they're watching the U.S. get weaker in the meantime.
Well, Webster, it'll be interesting to see what actually happens and comes out of this meeting, but I really appreciate your analysis,
Thank
as
you.
Always.
More on tarpley.net. Of course, he is the host weekly of World Crisis Radio, and you can get all those shows on tarpley.net and also from CascadiaPublicRadio.org. Which leads us now perfectly into the latest geopolitical headlines. Top of the list, U.S. and Russia sign treaty to cut nuclear arms. President Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev signed a nuclear arms reduction treaty in Prague yesterday, April 8th. The treaty cuts both the number of nuclear weapons available to both sides and the means of delivering them. The signing follows the U.S. announcement earlier this week that it had changed its nuclear strategy and limited the circumstances in which the U.S. might use nuclear weapons. Now, let's break this down a little more. Let's hop over to Julian Borger on The Guardian and the dodgy accounting of nuclear diplomacy. Take down the flags, put the champagne away. The text of the new START treaty is out on the U.S. State Department website, state.gov, and the small print confirms the warnings of its sternest critics. Dodgy new accounting rules means that the reductions in deployed nuclear weapons could turn out to be far less than the 30% advertised. Indeed, they could add up to nothing at all. The treaty sets a new ceiling for deployed strategic warheads at 1,550 on each side. That is indeed down about 30% from the ceilings established in the Moscow Treaty in 2002. But Article 3, Paragraph 2 of the new START Treaty reveals a catch, explaining how the warheads will be counted. Each reentry vehicle on top of each ICBM and each submarine-launched SLBM missile will count as one warhead, which makes sense. But Article 3 also says that, quote, one nuclear warhead shall be counted for each deployed heavy bomber, end quote. That's a backwards way of saying Every heavy bomber counts as just one warhead, even though a U.S. B-52 Stratofortress or a Russian Tu-95 Bear can carry multiple bombs and missiles, up to 20 in the case of the B-52. But they'll just count that as one. If you'd like a little example of that, let's think back to the Rogue B-52 flight carrying the, was it five or six nukes from Minot Air Force Base on its way to Barksdale. That would just count as one. Now, tied in with all this stuff, the show, again, what we try and do here is shine the light on the wall of the cave to dissipate the shadows being cast. Netanyahu cancels trip to Obama's nuclear summit. Let's hop over to Reuters for more on this story. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu canceled a planned trip to Washington next week for Obama's 47-country nuclear security conference. He made the decision after learning Egypt and Turkey intended to raise the issue, you know, of Israel's assumed atomic arsenal at the meeting. Israel is believed to be the only nuclear-armed power in the Middle East, but has never confirmed or denied. It has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the NPT. But meanwhile, Iran has. They've been open with their plants. But still, we have to go after Iran. But Israel's taking its ball and bat and going home. Israel distributes biochemical war protection kits. More on that from the AFP, Christian Science Monitor. Has an article on an economist tallying the swelling cost of Israel to the United States. Feds investigating another report of Mexican helicopters over Texas. More on that from the Houston Chronicle. Global Research has the centerpiece of the U.S., UN, and World Bank plan for Haiti is sweatshops and tourism. Execution of TV host in Saudi Arabia may be imminent. South African assassination. Will the killing of the white supremacist trigger racial violence? Webster Tarpley a few minutes ago mentioned the recent struggles with Karzai. Karzai threatened to join the Taliban. There's a delicate dance going on. Of course, he used to be on the board of Unical. His brother is a well-known drugs runner. And he is the sharpest dresser on the New World Order puppet stage, I have to admit. Thailand's premier declares martial law to control protest. Kyrgyzstani government ousted in violent uprising. More on that from VOA News and the Globe and Mail. Situations around the world, and again, I can't grasp all of it. I have a hard enough time grasping what's right in front of me, let alone halfway around the world. But again, we can see that on different levels they may be, a lot of the struggles are the same. We now move into history mystery, and we'll hop over to threat level. President Ford, Jerry the Jerk, approved warrantless domestic surveillance. While the country was embroiled in a national debate over excessive government surveillance in 1974, President Gerald Ford authorized the FBI to conduct warrantless domestic surveillance, according to a classified memo recently obtained by the Center for Investigative Reporting. The memo, with of course a link to the PDF for you, signed December 19, 1974, was issued just 1 month before the Senate established an 11-member panel known as the Church Committee to investigate government surveillance programs. The Church Committee would ultimately uncover the unconstitutional spying activities and all that, such as conducted by the NSA, under the rubric of Operation Shamrock. 2 days after the memo was signed, investigative reporter Seymour Hersh, writing in the New York Times, disclosed a covert government spying program that focused on monitoring political activists in the U.S. This didn't start with Bush. The things we see now didn't start with Obama. There is a long-running plan with interlocking multi-generational families and corporations that owe no allegiance or pay no allegiance to any flag or nation or God. They use all of this thing, all those things to divide and conquer all of us. And we play along on their dialectic, the false left-right paradigm. CIA can withhold Oklahoma City bombing documents. More on that from the UPI. And of course, we are now just a few short weeks away from the 15th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing and all that that entails. Another catalyzing, catastrophic event. It unfortunately appears as though we're returning to those days, as it seems to happen every time there's a Democrat. The enemy is here. And then when the fake conservatives are in, the enemy's over there. MSNBC to run McVeigh propaganda myth on the OKC anniversary. More on that from InfoWars. Digital Journal goes into the Bikini Atoll residents denied compensation for the nuclear tests. I know just very little about that. I do have a documentary queued up, Radio Bikini, about the nuclear tests on Bikini Island, I believe. And the last note is a new one posted just a few hours ago by way of 911blogger.com. Ramsey Clark chosen to head commission to investigate Bush crimes. Will this be a good thing or a limited hangout misdirection? We'll have to see. Now, getting to the anniversary of the OKC bombing, of course, means that's right smack dab in the middle of all the other mass murder, contagion, copycat, cluster events that seem to happen in the middle of April. Columbine, Waco, Virginia Tech, and on and on. Bracing ourselves. But a good note to start off the murder and mayhem. Traffic death rate hits new lows. UK Disney Resort, I believe in France, hit by staff suicides. Boy Scouts of America sued over sexual abuse of children. We've touched on that. Portland, Oregon is ground zero for this story. Playing out, of course, concurrently with the recent exposure again of Joey Ratz in the Catholic pedophilia ring. We've noted the perversion files may come out in a Portland courtroom. Wild shootings near Times Square. Man threatens to detonate bomb at the Tulsa International Airport. Armed robber forced Nova instructor to ATM, then killed him, then set his house on fire. Now, the interesting thing about this, and I believe this came originally to me by way of Cryptogon.com, but we hop over to the Palm Beach Post. Who would want to kill scientist Joseph Morrissey, who enjoyed an international reputation for his pioneering research into the use of radio frequency waves in cancer treatment? That's the question friends and colleagues were asking late Tuesday after Morrissey, 46, an assistant professor of pharmaceutical sciences at Nova Southwestern University, was fatally shot during what police say was a home invasion robbery. We have noted, but have neglected to take a lot of time to go into the story of all the dead scientists and microbiologists. The last note on murder and mayhem. Two arrested at Liverpool Airport after attempting to smuggle the corpse of their father onto a plane. Now, the women were saying, oh, we just thought he was asleep. But they had put sunglasses on him, rolled him up in a wheelchair, tried to get him on a plane because, you know, it's cheaper to put him in a seat than it would be to put him in
a coffin and mail it, or fly it, rather. There's a fascinating article from John Hankey, who you may know as the creator of the documentaries JFK 2, The Bush Connection, and The Assassination of JFK Jr. He has a provocatively titled article, "Is the Military Threatening to Kill Obama?" I have not gone through the whole thing. My take on the situation has always been, and I know I even talked briefly a couple of, I guess, summers ago now, to James Douglas, the author of JFK and The Unspeakable, that ultimately Obama isn't a threat to the system. We've not seen anything remotely coming near John F. Kennedy's financial moves he was going to make against the Federal Reserve, breaking the CIA up and ending and not escalating anymore the Vietnam War. PoliticalTheatrics.net has a scathing piece on Americans, apologetic, submissive, and complicit. They break down a number of points, the promise and the reality. The following facts can be found on Obama's website, addressed by subject in terms of what his pre-election points were and allegedly what his premises will always be whilst he's commander-in-chief. We'll just hit you the first one to give you the example. Barack Obama will responsibly end the war in Iraq. Promise. Immediately upon taking office, Obama will give his Secretary of Defense and military commanders a new mission in Iraq, successfully ending the war. The removal of our troops will be responsible and phased. The reality. Despite Obama's statement at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, on February 27th, wherein he stated that he had, quote, chosen a timeline that will remove our combat brigades over the next 18 months, end quote, a number of brigade combat teams, which have been the basic U.S. Army combat unit in Iraq for 6 years, will remain in Iraq after that date under a new non-combat label. They go into the promise, but the reality of increased stability in Iraq and the region, ensuring a strong U.S.-Israel partnership, and on and on. The latest from RasmussenReports.com, 48% Tea Party, 44% Obama. Now, while that is a good thing, we have, of course, noted the Tea Party and what it originally stood for and what was originally motivating it has been completely taken over and co-opted and misdirected by the Becks and the Palins and all the way down. And all those things those folks couldn't see during the Bush administration because he had an R after his name, they can suddenly see now because the new guy has a D after his name. It's the phony left-right garbage that, again, is the divide and conquer that keeps us getting nowhere. Fast. So, as if to illustrate that point, Quayle, Dan Quayle, urges Tea Party not to, quote, go parole. That means a third party. That's what they're doing. They're bringing you back into the fold. Fox News is up, CNN is down. One party's asleep, the other party's energized. But the agenda goes forward. Again, this didn't start with Obama, this didn't start with Bush, this didn't start with Gerald Ford. Justice Stevens likely to retire during Obama's presidency. And an interesting last couple of birther notes, if you will. Highly decorated Army surgeon, Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin, refuses all military orders until Obama proves he's a natural-born citizen. More on that from FamilySecurityMatters.org. And again, when all of this was raging now many, many, many several months ago,
back during the campaigns. I guess more time has gone by than that. A year and a half ago, talking about the birther citizenship issue on Media Monarchy. And I don't think I ever came down one way or the other. If it was true, they would just use it to change the Constitution overnight anyway. And then we saw people like Orly Tates come out, again, a wrecker, a misdirector, a co-opter. Phil Berg has pretty much done the yeoman's work and led the charge on ObamaCrimes.com. And that's all we're pretty much going to say about it, except for one last thing. Let's listen to a quick moment of Michelle Obama.
Barack has led by example. When we took our trip to Africa and visited his home country in Kenya.
Our last subheading here on the War Whores. U.S. troops killed Afghan women, then dug bullets out of their bodies to cover it up. More on that from the Huffington Post. McChrystal. McChrystal Meth. Admits U.S. troops are killing innocent Afghans at checkpoints. NATO admits U.S. forces killed innocent pregnant women in Afghanistan. 80-plus Iraqis and Afghans filed for compensation and filing for compensation over civilian deaths. Foreign governments lining up to buy U.S. drones. And the first U.S. citizen has been added to the CIA assassination list. Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S.-born and educated citizen now living in Yemen, has become the first American to be placed on a CIA assassination list targeting suspected terrorists. Al-Awlaki surfaced as a controversial figure after it was learned that the Fort Hood shooter, U.S. Army Major Nidal Hassan, had corresponded with him. He had also praised Hassan after the attack in an online posting. Furthermore, the Muslim cleric has been connected to the attempted bombing of a Detroit-bound airplane on Christmas Day. The Fort Hood shooting and the Christmas Day bomber, especially the Christmas Day bomber, completely discredited and debunked. No visa on the terror watch list. Put on the plane by a well-dressed handler, said he's from Sudan. We do this all the time. Someone videotaped the entire thing. When the fire set off in Mutalab's pants, he helped put it out because he didn't know what was going on. Kirk Haskell from Detroit testified all along that he was handled. He was shepherded every step of the way. And that's what happens in this world of rogue agents and moles and spies and triple agents. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. UK troops trained by firing at replica mosques. And the last note is a new edition. Just this morning, from the London Times, George W. Bush knew Guantanamo prisoners were innocent. W., Dick, and Rummy covered up that hundreds of innocent men were sent to Guantanamo because they feared that releasing them would harm the push for war in Iraq and the broader war of terror, according to a new document obtained by the Times. The accusations were made by Lawrence Wilkerson, a top aide to Colin Powell, former Republican Secretary of State, in a signed declaration to support a lawsuit filed by Guantanamo detainee. It's the first time that such allegations have been made by a senior member of the Bush administration. Oh, but we can't look into those crimes. We need to move forward for the American people. We need to bring them the change and the hope that they so foolishly bought into in the slickest advertising campaign in the 21st century. So, my friends, there you have it.
the massive news purge. Just an ugly, long list of headlines put on the record for you. And again, please do more research for yourself. And don't hesitate to send me links and news tips and stories. Comment on stories, share things, send posts. We're all connected up. We can all be connected up. Facebook.com/Media Monarchy. That's where everyone is. That's the most popular digital town square. Then that's where we're going to be to try and spread the word. So quickly now, let's run through some of the latest and greatest alternative media out there that I am lucky enough to be affiliated with, and I support and promote their work. The latest episode from James Corbett and CorbettReport.com, episode 124, How to Cover Up a Scandal. Fake inquiries, media silence, and whistleblower suppression are just some of the ways that the greatest scandals of our time fly completely under the radar. This week, we talk to the son of famed CIA operative E. Howard Hunt about the tricks of the trade and how the elite get away with murder. You can also, of course, get the full interview with St. John Hunt, son of Watergate burglar, suspected, then admitted involvement in the assassination of JFK, E. Howard Hunt. Also, recent interviews with international forecaster Bob Chapman, Deborah Peel of Patient Privacy Rights Foundation. And we've also been putting out the audio of our video series, The New World Next Week. That's just a small little MP3. Of course, the fantastic Sunday Update video series from CorbettReport.com. This most recent episode goes into the coming biometric ID, the coming OKC propaganda and repeating, and the CNN destruction. Again, CNN down, Fox up. The dialectic. So speaking of the latest New World Next Week episode for April 8th, where we go into Reverend Billy, collateral murder, and net neutrality. We're going to get into net neutrality here in just a few minutes. Reverend Billy, collateral murder, we're going to get into extensively on episode 165. Please support the New World Next Week on YouTube. Share, rate, comment, promote, download, cross-post. Put them on your favorite social networking site. We're getting thousands of views each week. But if everybody shared and sent them out just a little bit more, they could be seen by even more people. And again, they're a great way, a bite-sized form, again, folks who aren't going to listen to hours-long podcasts of me running my mouth. James does great work editing and putting the videos together. This most recent episode is an upgrade. They look even better than before. Super high quality. So again, MediaMonarchy.com and CorbettReport.com. The New World Next Week. My man Clyde Lewis of Ground Zero Media, of course, on KUFO 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, blasting out 50,000 watts on Sunday nights. Simulcast, and of course you can download the shows later from zeropointradio.com. They also bring you Media Monarchy and Corbett Report and a ton of other great shows. Soldiers of the One, the Pale Horse PSYOP, is what Clyde went into on the most recent episode. All about the predictive programming, the media, universal healthcare, all of it. Pale Horse, the Hutari militias. And he also noted in there, and I thank him for that, the next article we're going to hit on MediaMonarchy.com from News Junkie Post, The End of Days, So Many Antichrists, So Little Time. Amid the current scandal involving Joey Ratz, speculation has increased that perhaps Christ's very own vicar on earth is none other than the great deceiver. The Antichrist, the harbinger of the end times, the deceiver who hides behind a facade of goodness. Joseph Ratzinger is a past member of the Hitler Youth and current pederast enabler, cloaked in his holy vestments, holding the faith of billions in the palm of his hand. Many seem to think that the only way to see him clearly is through the nebulous lens of biblical prophecy. Many evangelicals believe that the Antichrist, or beast, is a political leader that will carry a message of hope for the people of the world. Many of those same evangelicals believe that there are, in fact, more than one Antichrist working in concert to usher in the end times. The first would be the political leader, followed by a religious leader who gives credibility to the first. The second beast of the Book of Revelations would then encourage the masses to first accept, then trust, and finally worship the first beast. What we must come to realize is that the Antichrist is nothing more than a boogeyman for grown-ups. He's the monster under the bed and the villain in the closet. He's the Kaiser Soze of the irrational and the biggest and scariest of the imaginary things that go bump in the night. He's the name that we give to those who have lived and killed among us on the grandest of scales. He is the boogeyman's boogeyman. The Antichrist lives only in our ignorance and abides there from generation to generation, from age to age, from Attila the Hun to the next despot in waiting. The Antichrist is no more a reality than the perpetually unfulfilled prophecies of the Bible. It's time for us to outgrow the ghost stories fabricated during society's infancies and embrace the future with enlightened maturity. That is from NewsJunkiePost.com. I agree with much of that. I don't agree with all of it. Whether you believe in God or not, there are millions that do. And again, whether you believe in the phony left-right paradigm or not, there are millions that do. I believe here pretty soon we're going to have an interview where we're going to get into a lot of these issues. And again, I have a background in the church that I've wrestled with ever since. So keep an eye out for a provocative interview on the New World Order with a Christian perspective, I believe coming very soon from MediaMonarchy.com. A couple of related updates. Catholic hotline in meltdown over pedophile priests. The Telegraph reports that a new hotline set up by the church pretty much was overrun. Pope's immunity to prosecution may be challenged in the UK, and during the Easter Mass just this past Sunday on April 4th, Joey Ratz remained silent on the pedophilia scandals. The last note on the end of days, so many antichrists, so little time. I don't have the clip for you, but it's there for you if you want it. Some related Onion satire. Christ announces hiring of associate Christ. So all of that was from MediaMonarchy.com. We're now going to jump over to FoodWorldOrder.com, brought to you by Media Monarchy. First from Businessweek, global food reserve needed to stabilize prices. A global crop reserve system is needed to reduce price volatility, curb speculation, and prevent a food crisis, said researchers from Germany and France. Centralized global stocks could bring peace and quiet to world food markets, said Joachim von Braun, director of Germany's Center for Development Research, at a conference on agriculture research in France. World food prices started rising in 07 and climbed to a record in June 08. Surging prices of wheat, rice, and corn sparked riots from Haiti to the Ivory Coast. Von Braun said the IFPRI research has shown fund investment in agricultural commodity figures added to price volatility, saying, quote, "The world is no more food secure today than it was 3 years ago when the world food price crisis hit," said von Braun, a University of Bonn professor and former head of the Washington-based International Food Policy Research Institute, IFPRI. He also said, "We need an efficient, global, coordinated reserve policy which brings peace and quiet to the world food market." That article goes on, but again, any global centralized control of anything makes me nervous. But again, as we said time and time again during the Obamacare health scare, if they wanted to deliver health and food to the world, they could do it in the same shock and awe fashion they deliver unjustified death and destruction around the world for a fraction of the cost. But it all ties into the eugenics ops that, again, those interlocking families and organizations, that's what they believe in. Eugenics. An interesting one from Julian Rose, writing on theecologist.org. Organic farming has sold out and lost its way. The dreams of the early organic pioneers have been subsumed into a rush for global supply chains, strict regulations, and fast-selling brands. He basically talks about back in 75 starting an organic farm. Few people committed to weaning their land off agrochemicals, improving their soil fertility, and supporting good animal health through regular crop rotations. Not overly concerned with financial profit, adequate returns, and of course, on the quality, flavor, and freshness of the foods produced. What organic food and its localized market was in those days bears little resemblance to the industry that it is today, an industry that is heavily and centrally policed, has a compendium of regulations, and is big business on a global scale. The organic food and farming movement can only help reverse this Orwellian scenario and contribute to a better future by revisiting its roots and ceasing to chase the chimera of big-time branded salvation. The Nasty Secret in Your Kitchen Cupboard, by way of independent.co.uk, goes into, finally, BPA being discussed in the UK. Some of Britain's best-known foods contain the controversial chemical bisphenol A. Tins of Heinz baked beans, soup and beans, John West and Prince's fish, and Napolina tomatoes are lined with a membrane containing BPA, an endocrine disruptor. I would point you to a recent episode from CorbettReport.com, Know Your Toxins, BPA. We're going to shift gears now and close out the rest of the show by jumping to CyberspaceWar.com, also brought to you by Media Monarchy, with a scary one. But again, it shouldn't be surprising. It's the way everything seems to be moving. Nick Eaton, writing for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, on Microsoft patenting Guardian Angel as an intelligent personal assistant, but asking the question, would Microsoft's Guardian Angel turn our brains into mush? Nick Eaton writes, I was reading Tech Flash's piece on Microsoft's new Guardian Angel patent, and it stirred up a creepy feeling inside of me. In the time I've been covering Microsoft for the Seattle PI, I've had this strange shudder a handful of times, and I'm wondering if other people feel it as well. TechFlash.com reported that Microsoft has been granted a patent on an intelligent personal assistant that could predict a user's wants and actions. If the user's at a shopping mall and the software's artificial intelligence knows it's lunchtime, the Guardian Angel could search for nearby restaurants that serve the user's preferred foods, choose a cuisine based on the user's recent meals, check for available seating, and make lunch reservations. This is an example laid out in Microsoft's 2006 patent application, which lists Bill Gates and Ray Ozzie as two of the inventors. But I know of an existing device that already has this function. It's called the human brain. Call me pessimistic if you want, but do we really need the artificial intelligence of a digital guardian angel to supplant the organic intelligence of our own selves? One anonymous comment at the bottom of this posting says, Nick, no, you're not being pessimistic. You're merely using your natural intelligence and human instinct to question the need for Microsoft's guardian angel. Sounds too creepy to me, too. Don't know how it works, too early to tell, but I guess it seems potentially invasive or intrusive in our lives, and I don't believe we need it. We should, of course, note Bill Gates, father on the board of Planned Parenthood, of course, founded by avowed racist and eugenicist Margaret Sanger. If you're not familiar with any of that, you must do the research into eugenics. But again, we're talking about Microsoft Guardian Angel, so we're more talking about transhumanism and the singularity and the smart grid. Uncle Scam wants you to fight hackers. More on that from businessweek.com. And again, we've told you time and time again that as the rug gets pulled out from under us in the fake economy and they set up the new financial world order right in front of our very eyes, the only jobs will be working for the state. Federal IT pros say U.S. at high risk for cyber attack. More on that from CNET. Security guru Richard Clark talks cyber war to Forbes. Richard Clark, of course, former counter-terror czar under previous puppets. We always must note that he has admitted, as well as Professor Lawrence Lessig have admitted, that there is an iPatriot Act sitting on the shelf, just waiting for some I-9-11 event, some catalyzing, catastrophic event, that would probably be the end of the web as we know it. That's why things seem kind of urgent. And I hope you realize that. NASA listens for signs of life from the Mars lander. More on that from computerworld.com. And the last note, April Fool's UFO report sparks panic in Jordan. A Jordanian newspaper's April Fool's Day report chronicling a late-night visit by 10-foot-tall aliens and flying saucers sparked public panic and almost led to the town's emergency evacuation. The Al Gad newspaper published a front article April 1st about the fake UFO landing near the desert town of Jafur, some 185 miles from the capital, Amman. The report said the UFOs lit up the whole town, interrupted communications, and sent fearful residents streaming into the streets. War of the Worlds. Are we prepped for a sequel to War of the Worlds? Some, again, Project Bluebeam, fake alien, fake rapture, fake religious event in the sky. The technology is there. We've gone over it for you. Holographic projections, seeding the skies with barium. That's what's in some of the chemtrails. Laying down the canvas, if you will, so that they could project Jesus or Allah or Buddha in the sky. Whichever one suits you. Audio spotlights in your head, sound in your head. I think I said finally on that one, but that was, I just ran into the next posting. We're flying through them now on cyberspacewar.com. From the Associated Press, Air Force space plane, military launching robotic space vehicle. After a decade of development, the Air Force this month plans to launch a robotic spacecraft resembling a small space shuttle to conduct technology tests in orbit and then glide home to a California runway. The ultimate purpose of the X-37B orbital test vehicle and details about the craft, which have been passed between several government agencies, however, remain a mystery as it is prepared for a launch April 19th from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Hundreds of millions of dollars spent on the X-37 program, but the current total has not been released. Built by Boeing's Phantom Works, I posted up the entire article. It goes on and on, of course, tied in with DARPA and all our favorite private military contractor friends. Space war indeed. Now, a major story that we only got into briefly on the most recent New World Next Week. FCC loses net neutrality battle against Comcast. Court rules FCC had no right to sanction Comcast for peer-to-peer blocking. From the Washington Post, Comcast on Tuesday won its federal lawsuit against the FCC in a ruling that undermines the agency's ability to regulate internet service providers just as it unrolls a sweeping broadband agenda. The decision also sparks pressing questions on how the agency will respond, with public interest groups advocating that the FCC attempt to move those services into a regulatory regime clearly under the agency's control. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Criminals, in a 3-0 decision, ruled that the FCC lacked the authority to require Comcast, the nation's biggest broadband service provider, to treat all internet traffic equally on its network. That decision, based on a 2008 ruling under former FCC Chairman Kevin Martin, addresses Comcast's argument that the agency, quote, failed to justify exercising jurisdiction, end quote, when it ruled Comcast violated broadband principles by blocking or slowing a peer-sharing website, BitTorrent. But it also unleashed a broader debate over the agency's ability to regulate broadband service providers such as AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon. The judges focused on whether the FCC has legal authority over broadband services, which are categorized separately from phone, cable television, and wireless services. The agency currently has only ancillary authority over broadband services, a decision made by past agency leaders in an attempt to keep the fast-moving internet services market at an arm's distance from the agency. This is a sticky issue. Basically, can you argue for more government control when it suits you, but less when it doesn't? I don't have the answer to that right now. But we do have a lot more information available on this topic from PC World and ArsTechnica.com. The update at the bottom from Raw Story: undaunted by Comcast court victory, FCC moves ahead with broadband plans. That is something we're going to have to get into very much so in the not too distant future. Finally now, my friends, on this C-side episode of 164 from Media Monarchy, just a quick brief mention on the decrypted video from WikiLeaks showing collateral murder. This story is so massive, and of course it relates to both, so I posted and cross-posted two different articles, one on MediaMonarchy.com, one right here on CyberspaceWar.com. WikiLeaks, of course, releasing a video of civilians killed by the U.S. in Baghdad. We are going to get into that extensively in the upcoming episode 165. I hope very much you will stay tuned for that. Of course, recording and broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority here in downtown Portland, Oregon. PRARadio.org. An amazing, jam-packed episode 165 coming up with exclusive material. Because, of course, I'm born and raised West Virginia. This mining accident happened pretty much 30 miles away from where I'm from. And it hits me close. And again, I've got exclusive recordings for you. We're going to go into that. We're going to go into WikiLeaks. We're going to go into Rev Billy. Police state updates. Oregon oddities. All that. So much more. My friends, I thank you. And again, I know that on these B and C side episodes, they have, I believe, less listeners. But I implore you still to share these, spread them around, pass them off to someone. I thank and love you guys for all the feedback and help that you give. And again, I don't have it all figured out. The more I learn, the more I know I don't know. And that's what keeps us all going. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, and CyberspaceWar.com. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
I mean, so
it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
On my breath.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.